Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Tuesday. You know what that means. We are joined by the wonderful Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Company. You can find him on social media at J-U-M-O-S-Q. Justice, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. No three-peat.
No three-peat.
I'm sure a lot of people are happy about that. Me, I understand I'm supposed to care. I don't think a three-peat would have diminished anything Lombardi did. Also, that stuff happened in the 60s. I am 30. My father was born in the 70s. So,
yeah.
Yeah. My family wasn't in the country yet by the time that stuff happened. So, you know, I do not have the emotional connection that other people do.
I think the thing was, and I'm with you 100%. I think the thing was, is if anyone just would have said, you know, anything about it, or if there would have been like, hey, we're going to actually talk about it on the Super Bowl too, Green Bay did it or whatever, I don't think it ever would have really been a thing. I think the fact that like people are saying it was the first three-peat, and I get that they were saying in like the Super Bowl era or whatever, but it made it come across as like in NFL history, nobody's ever done this. I think that was the only thing that I was like, oh, well, actually. But I think if it just would have been said, you know, hey, nobody's ever done this in the Super Bowl era. The Packers have done it twice in the pre-Super Bowl era. I don't think anyone ever would have had an issue with it. I think it was just a framing of it. And I'm just glad that we had such an awful, game that wasn't competitive that they had time to actually bring up the Packers double three-peat. So everyone ends happy in the end, Justice.
Yeah, Chiefs were down and then punted, down 7-0 and then punted, I believe. And that's when I hit Chiefs money line. And I was like, okay, they still have a chance. And then, boy, oh boy, did Patrick Mahomes throw some of the worst interceptions that I've seen him throw ever. The DeJean one, he just clearly didn't see him. Like, he just did not see DeJean at all. And then
and it was covered. It wasn't even open if DeJean wasn't there.
Like, yeah, it was a one-on-one ball. And he just didn't see DeJean at all. And then the Bond one, I mean, that was just pressure getting to him. And
yeah.
Not a good ball, all that stuff. I mean, just brutal interceptions backed up. I mean, goodness gracious. I don't know what you do if you're the Chiefs at that, because what? They lost once, twice during the regular season, and now they're having to look in the mirror, and they're like, actually, all those things that everyone said throughout the year where it's like, Kansas City shouldn't be winning these games. They're winning a bunch of tight games, and all the numbers say, like, this is not a team that is as good as their record, right? It'll be interesting to see how they tackle the offseason, for sure.
It is such a weird thing. And there's a piece of me that absolutely hates the, you know, when the Packers were the most fraudulent 13-3 team ever, or whatever that was, in Matt LaFleur's first season as coach. And like go win your games. Like, I for the most part, I don't really care like about the style points, but man, is it, does it not usually play out by the end of the year that like the teams that like the Vikings this year, like, you know, we kind of saw it play out, the Vikings last year to some extent. Like, these teams that are getting by the skin of their teeth in the regular season don't always tend to do so well in the postseason. And I mean, I'm not also always a believer in it. And this Chiefs team, though, all season long, I got into the playoffs. I picked against the Chiefs in their first playoff game. I picked against them. I'm like, the Chiefs are going down. Like, it's going to catch up with them. And then they win again. And then it's Chiefs Bills, and Bills look like the best that they've looked. And I'm like, Chiefs are going down. Like, this is clear and obvious. Then the Chiefs win again. And finally, this is the week. I still picked the Eagles in this one, but I was like, maybe I'm just an idiot. Like, maybe I'm the one that's wrong here. And they just know how to weirdly win in odd ways. And that's a skill in and of itself. But it did feel like everything sort of caught up with them in a major way all in this game.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of came into the playoffs thinking that whoever was going to win that Bills-Ravens game was probably going to win the Super Bowl, especially after, you know, all the injuries in Detroit and stuff like that, right? Yeah. You know, we all know the season's a battle of attrition and all that stuff. And then slowly, I mean, the Chiefs just keep winning these games, and they've won them throughout the season. And you've seen Mahomes hold up the trophy so many times already. And you're just, at some point, you're just like, I don't, like, I wasn't picking anyone. Again, like I said, like I hit it after Chiefs went down, but coming into the game, I was just like, I just hope it's entertaining. So I'm 0-2 on that. My whole prognostication on that thing was just, I don't know. Sure seems like the Eagles have a better team, but they have Mahomes, and Mahomes doesn't lose very often, and that bit me in the butt. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens moving forward.
As far as other takeaways from this game, as you kind of look back, specifically the Eagles season, the things that they did in the offseason, they lost 5 of their last 6 at the end of last year, brutally losing the playoffs to Tampa Bay in the wild card round. Come back this year, new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. They go get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. They go get the two rookies in DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell, Zach Bond at linebacker. The one thing that actually, like, the only thing that didn't work out really was Bryce Huff to the level I think that they were expecting it to. Mekhi Becton at guard, that Saquon Barkley guy is pretty good. Like,
I was going to say, you haven't mentioned them yet. Yeah,
I was getting there. Like, they go out with Jahan Dotson. Again, I don't know how much that worked out, but he paid off in moments. Touchdown against Green Bay, if I remember correctly, and then had the big play this week as well. But they pretty much everything they did outside of Huff to an extent really sort of turned to gold. Any big takeaways that you have just from how they built the roster, how they played, what you want to see Green Bay do based off of how Philly went about winning the season? The floor is yours.
That's an aggressive team that is willing to restructure contracts. They are willing to take swings on some of these guys like Mekhi Becton and stuff like that. I mean, Bond is another one, right? That, you know, he certainly has made himself a lot of money in the year that he's been in Philadelphia. That's a team that's, you know, they're all in, and the way that they've structured that Hurts contract, I mean, it has automatic conversions in it, right? So they want to keep this title window open, and then it's gonna crash out for a couple of years, maybe, you know, 1-2 seasons at the end of this. But right now they believe that, you know, the title window is open, and then they're gonna go attack it, and I'm hoping that's kind of what the Packers do. And I think it's so incredibly silly. I know we brought this up probably, I think, last week. Yeah, it would have been the Myles Garrett start to stuff. Like, the fact that the Browns are like, we are modeling ourselves after the Philadelphia Eagles. You are in such different spots. I cannot believe that you have people who actually bought into this idea. This is what contenders should be doing, right? They should be doing all this stuff. And I think there's enough stability in Green Bay, especially coming off of, like, the Packers were maxed out at the end, right? In terms of, and I know people get mad because they say all in, and they go, who'd you bring in? They didn't bring in anyone. They kept people, right?
Yep.
But they couldn't do, like, they couldn't have kept Devontae without pretty significant changes to that roster, right? And that wouldn't have allowed them to do anything else, right? It would have been add Devontae, subtract several things. And that's all we got at the end of Rodgers, right? The fact that the Packers have shown that they can kind of come out of the ashes. I mean, again, they've made the playoffs with the youngest team that have ever made the playoffs the past two seasons. I think inspires confidence that, like, now that their cap is in a good spot and that they can start doing Eagles things, that is something that they can dig themselves out of. And it's not this whole organizational restructuring that I think the front office is really worried about, right? Like, I think those guys there, it's not really about protecting their jobs. It's like protecting, like, the infrastructure around the front office. And I think they look at what happened during the Mike Sherman era and they're like, never again, never can we let this ever happen again. And I think there's a way that you can buy in confidence in the same way that Howie Roseman has had that job with several. I mean, he's been there since Andy Reid was there, right? And it's not that, like, okay, we know where you're at in terms of, like, the developmental curve, right? And we know when you're all in and when the window is open and when things are constricting and you need to rebuild and stuff like that. And we're not just going to can you the first time that you're going to go sub 500. Or something like that, because you've bought in some of that confidence. And I'm hoping that the team uses the cap space that they have available, all the mechanisms that they have available to build a really competitive roster, and that they see, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles as an example of a team that can come out of the ashes you know, in between those kind of title runs, if that makes sense at all.
I have to believe that Goody's message of urgency has to go into this some extent. And we talked about a little bit last week of how, like, they've kind of earned the opportunity to go out and be aggressive. Like, they've got the base of their team. They've got the depth. We talked about it last week as well. They don't need 15 more guys on this team. Like, they don't need, you know, a bunch of early draft picks and developmental guys. They need three or four really great players. Josh Jacobs echoed those sentiments, you know, during the week, exactly what we were basically saying. Like, they need, they're about three pieces away, and it's not just three new guys, you know, new rookies or whatever. It's like three significant additions, and they're right there. And I still believe that. I still agree with that. And I'm just interested to see if he's going to kind of back it up. And after having that message of urgency, go out and pull some of those levers, use those mechanisms and say, yeah, we're going for this thing. The time is now. We're pounding right through this window, and we're going to do it aggressively.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I mean, to your point, it doesn't even necessarily have to be new people. Like, I think I would view Jaire Alexander restructure with incentives added to it and stuff like that as an attempt, at least an at bat at, yep, at one of those big swings. Like, you're not,
for sure,
there's no promise that you're going to hit the home run, right? But it's at least an opportunity to say, like, look, we're making a bet, and we might be wrong, but we might end up getting one of these, you know, Milt Williams, Josh Sweat. I'm trying to think.
Mekhi Becton,
like any of these, any of these guys who, you know, have the potential to be high upside players on some of these championship teams that are not necessarily going to be break the bank type of players. And I think that's kind of where Jaire fits in at this point. And whether it's going to be in Green Bay or not is kind of, you know, the several million dollar question, I guess.
He's going to be a home run swing for somebody, and somebody's going to take it. How they get to that point, we'll have to wait and see. But I'm with you in the fact that, to me right now, I sort of view Jaire Alexander as not on the roster, even though he's technically on the roster. And if they figure out a way to get him back, to me, that is actually, weirdly as it might sound, that almost feels like an addition. And it, like you,
that's
said,
a move.
Like,
that's a move.
Taking a swing at it. Yeah. And the more and more I watch some of these corners, we're going to talk about some of these corners in just a bit, the less and less I mind that idea, just because I don't know that there's a perfect 1A, but maybe you have a perfect 1A corner that you're keeping an eye on. One other thing about the roster building, I have sort of a bold take on this, and maybe I just end up being wrong, but I think the more and more that I watch how aggressive the NFL is getting with their all-in sort of moments, you already see it in baseball. You already see it in, certainly in basketball, where you do, when you go all in, you're trading all the picks, all the swaps, all the everything to go all in. I think that's going to happen in the NFL sometime in the next decade, where we get to the point where teams are like, obviously in the NFL, you can only trade 3 years of draft picks. It's not like the NBA where you can do 7 years and stuff like that. But I think you're going to start seeing teams get to bare bones of draft picks where they've got, like, you know, they've traded away firsts and seconds and thirds of this year, next year, the following year. And they're literally doing everything they can to build a team, right? I could be wrong. I've seen it in baseball. I've seen it in basketball. And I think at some point, some team is going to do it and just say, like, screw it. We're like literal F them picks, like all in on F them picks. And we're going to go super aggressive, and we're going to build a team for right here and now. I think it's going to happen at some point, maybe not quite yet, but I think in the next decade.
I think it would make more sense to, I mean, it's interesting because the NFL, I mean, the cap structure is a little different, right? And there's not like aprons like there are in the NBA where, correct, you know, you can kind of go over it a little bit and stuff like that. I think the way that teams would do it probably is like, if a guy has like a big rookie year, that player now is looked at like as a trade asset.
Yeah.
Right. Or that's how it would have to work in the NFL, because you you cannot, unless you're going to throw out UDFAs out there, right? Like, you can't build a vet team in the NFL. The whole point of the NFL structure is to get guys out in like 4 years, unless you're a superstar, essentially, right?
Churn it.
Yeah. So I think it would be like looking at like rookie players as assets, where you're like, oh, I mean, like in the Packers situation, right? Evan Williams breaks out. Javon Bullard looks like he's going to be in the slot. Did you really want to spend a second round pick in the slot? Can Javon Bullard play safety for someone else? Is that now a trade asset that you can move around? And maybe you're not getting a second round pick back, but like that's a trade that could happen. Like, I guess it'd be more just looking at rosters is more fluid, right? And yes, more trades. And we've already seen more trades, right? People have brought up that, like, just the invention of the smartphone, right? And how technology and, you know, social media and stuff like that impacts a younger generation of coaches and general managers and stuff. And now guys can text each other and people are having a lot more conversations about players that they didn't have probably 15 years ago, I'd probably say.
When we had Elvis Dumervil trades vetoed because the facts didn't get in on time.
Because the facts didn't come in at time, in the right time. Yeah, I mean, yeah, crazy stuff. I know one of my close buddies is Nate Tice, who works for Yahoo Sports. And he talks about like how his pops, Mike Tice, by the way, if you haven't figured that one out yet. He was like one of the first people who like worked with like spreadsheets to like organize stuff in the NFL. And this was, you know, mid-90s.
Right.
This was when he was, I think he was working with like Brian Billick. It was like those two were really like the forefront of like, hey, what if we like added all this structure stuff? And now you're looking at, I mean, I don't know if you've been around like a high school football team, like you have practice plans and stuff like that on spreadsheets that are getting printed out like every single day and passed out to right. coaches and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, stuff just changes with technology and we see how fast this world is working and there's no reason why that wouldn't impact the sports world. And I'm sure that's coming for the NFL at some point, but I do think the mechanics of everything are going to look a little bit different than the NBA for sure because of, I mean, they're trading eighth graders is the joke I always say, right?
Yeah.
And they have the aprons and all that stuff and much smaller rosters. And then the MLB, I mean, there's just no capital. And honestly, I don't even know how much the MLB is like teams are worth way more than other teams as much as it is like owners don't want to pay the money. Like, no, maybe, like teams are like, yeah, well, oh, the Dodgers are making all these moves. And I'm like, you couldn't make one of the five moves that the Dodgers, I'm not asking you to make every single move that the Dodgers made, but you, no. There's no one in the league that could have made one of the five moves. It just seems like when the Red Sox are playing the poor me card for like the Mookie Betts trade, I was like, oh, baseball is down a bad path.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. The Dodgers offseason is, I think, ruining stuff for a lot of people. We'll see. But if they just go on like a, you know, 7-year run here because they just have more money, it's obviously not going to be ideal. We could go down that rabbit hole for quite a amount of time as well. I was going to say something else in regards to that, but I don't remember what it was. So we're going to move forward. Eagles, Packers, 22-10 as the Packers get eliminated from the playoffs in the wild card round. Do you feel any differently? I know that's been a topic of conversation now that we've seen what the Eagles have done to other teams, specifically Washington and KC these past 2 weeks. Make you feel any different, worse, indifference? How do you feel?
I don't feel too different because I've seen the Packers season every week of it, right? So like I know what their strengths and weaknesses are. Okay, we turned the ball over what, 4 times and only gave up 22 points to the Eagles. The Eagles outscored their last two opponents on this title run 95-45, right? The opposing defenses gave up more than 22 points in just the first halves of the last two games. But I think the core issues with the team, my opinion, isn't swayed. I mean, I know that this team is relatively close, right? Like going into that Eagles game, I was the dumbass who stuck his neck out and was like, why should we be afraid of the Eagles? Why are we trying to avoid the 2 seed so much? That one, maybe one of my worst takes. I also bet against Nick Foles the entire way that Eagles run. And I lost a lot of money when I did not have the money to lose. Don't do that, fellas. But yeah, I don't feel too differently, but I did see that was being discussed around the internet and we shouldn't hang banners for that is my thought.
Yeah. I talked about that today as well. Basically saying it doesn't change much for me. Just because the team that beat you won the Super Bowl, I don't specifically feel any better. The goal is to win regardless of who you're playing against. And they did not do that. And did not play well in that game. And when you have the opening kickoff and just the amount of turnovers they had from there. Yeah. I think to your point, we knew exactly who Green Bay was. On most Sundays, they had the ability to go out and play a really good football game. You just didn't ever know if it was you were going to get it or not. And on that particular day, you certainly did not. And Philly was clearly the better team. And I think Philly was deserving of the Super Bowl. I think they went on a pretty epic run. They built the team the right way, had a really good offense, really good defense, more than serviceable special teams. They were a fantastic football team, earned every bit of it.
Yeah, really good defense. I would say, like, outside of like Chauncey Gardner Johnson, like, there aren't many holes on that defense.
I feel like, brings the mentality. Like, he's got holes in his game for sure. There's no question about it. But I've said forever, like, every Bucks team needs a PJ Tucker. You got to have just a couple of those guys that are just crazy, and they may not even be the best player, but they bring that level of crazy, and that helps in and of itself.
Yeah, and then the offensive line, just. Stoutland, I think, goes to show you how important those offensive line coaches are. I do wonder if we have a conversation about the Packers offensive line after next season, depending on whether they develop or not. I think that's when kind of the spotlight comes, in the same way where it was, I'm spacing on his name, the defensive line coach, not this past year, not Revrovich, the year before that. I forget his name, but it was like, okay,
I know
it's been years and they haven't developed. And then this year it's, the edge rushers, it's been years and they haven't developed. And I wonder if now the next guy in the spotlight, right, is going to be the offensive line coach.
It could be. Butkus is in an interesting spot. Now it's going to bother me of who that guy was. Jerry Montgomery.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the interior line coach. And then, correct, I think he had the run game coordinator title too.
So yeah, I do think that it's going to be an interesting, I do think we need to see some progression. I think a couple of these, I think wide receiver, offensive line, we'll see what the new defensive line coach brings, but there's some of these positions where there's a lot of resources in there. And I think this team's going to want to see the ROI on it. And if not, you could end up in a more Rebrovich situation. Well, it's over. Football season has officially come to an end, and Green Bay now starts fresh as they look forward to the 2025-2026 season. But just because football season's over doesn't mean Prize Picks season needs to come to an end. While there's never a bad time to sign up, you can download the app right now and sign up today to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. And don't forget that Prize Picks doesn't end with football season. Basketball, college basketball, soccer, tennis, women's college basketball, darts, and so many more sports and options are out there for you to play right now. This week, I'm going with Darius Garland to have a huge week for Cleveland, Anthony Edwards to go off for Minnesota, and I'm even expecting a big game for Jude Bellingham in soccer. I'm keeping my eyes on absolutely everything. Just make sure you don't forget to download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app, using code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game.
The wide receiver position, I just dug into it. I'm going to try to find this article that I wrote. Growing pains of a young receiver room. There we go.
Yeah, I saw this.
So this is really interesting to me, right? So I looked at draft picks that the Packers have made over the last couple seasons, how they performed and how they performed relative to players who are available for the Packers, right? Because that's really what you're judging. I mean, if your fourth round pick turns into Romeo Dobbs, you're not complaining that you didn't get Garrett Wilson, right? Because he wasn't available with that selection.
Correct.
So I looked at it. Players in their draft classes who have more receiving yards since they've come into the league, right? That's the easiest way to explain it. Romeo Dobbs, zero. He was the best player available. Jaden Reed, one guy, Puka Nacua. I'm fine taking an L on Puka Nacua. I like Puka Nacua, actually. And I tweeted like a week after the Rams drafted him, because I wasn't paying too close attention on day three. I was like, wow, that is a perfect pick for that situation. But if the Rams would have thought Puka Nacua was going to be the guy that he developed into, which is not what I thought he was going to develop into, by the way, I thought he was maybe going to be like a Jaden Reed type of a guy rather than who he's developed into right now. They wouldn't have drafted him in like the sixth round or whatever, where they passed over him a thousand times. Then Tavian Wicks, two guys have performed better than him. It's Puka Nacua and DeMario Douglas. I'm going to be honest, haven't seen enough from DeMario Douglas's game to really make a judgment there, but
he's a good player. He's a good player.
Yeah, but I assume, you know, the Wicks pick ends up kind of breaking out. And then the Christian Watson, this is all in terms of receiving yards. The guys who have outproduced him once he was available. Dobbs, his own teammate, hard to call that one a no. George Pickens, who the Packers brought in, right? The Packers, it's not like they weren't aware of George Pickens. They just decided to go with Christian Watson. Pickens has obviously had some of those blowups on the sideline and stuff like that. What you want to do with that, I don't know, but I don't really hold that against them. And Then the last one's Trey McBride, who plays an entirely different position. No one is mistaking Trey McBride for what Christian Watson can bring to the roster. Plus, totally I think different. Christian is a guy, too, who, like, his teammates get better around him. Like, his numbers are never going to match up to kind of what his influence on the game is. So when you're looking at this stuff, we're like, all right, if we're down in the Watson stuff, Reed, okay, you could have taken Nacua. Great.
The Reed 2020 hindsight. Right? One's a second round pick, one's a sixth round pick. Like, that's never a conversation. Yeah. Nobody, right. I would be pretty stunned. I don't know, maybe a team had Puka Nacua graded ahead of Jaden Reed in that draft, but probably not. And again, like the Wicks Nacua one, you could be like, all right, fifth and sixth. But like outside of that, there's to me, Reed and Nacua are not in the same stratosphere going into that draft.
Right. So I understand the frustration from Packers fans about the wide receiver position and stuff like this, but this is just like, guys, this is what it looks like when you build a wide receiver unit out of day two and three picks, and these guys are still young. And it's, you know, when you had, you know, Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson and all those guys developing, you still had a Greg Jennings. You still had a Donald Driver. Like, the problem with the Packers isn't that their receivers aren't developing. It's just that, like, there's just like no buffer for them because we've asked them to produce immediately, right? So I do think that it's an interesting situation. I think it gets way more interesting when we talk about, like, what do we pay these guys moving forward. But as far as like the wide receiver coach situation, I'm definitely way more worried about, can we get more out of the offensive linemen? Are they going to keep, you know, plus one in attributes moving forward than I am at the receiver position?
One guy that did just become available, Deebo Samuel, is somebody that Brian Gutekunst maybe just name dropped a little bit, saying that when they drafted Elgton Jenkins, two people that they also liked at that time was DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel, both just might happen to be available on the trade market. I'm not really thinking that Deebo Samuel would be the wisest investment at the moment, but if you feel otherwise, feel free to try to convince me.
So I did think it was interesting, Goot, who never talks about other people's players.
Agreed.
Mentioned in his end of the year press conference that they were thinking about DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel for the pick that they ended up turning in for Elgton Jenkins. And I think that ended up being the right pick for where the team was at in that position. But those are two players who can add interesting elements to this team. Who knows if DK is going to be, if DK is going to become available. I think that's the perfect wide receiver for what this team needs right now, just in terms of like an outside receiver threat who could take the top off the defense. I think that helps a lot, especially with Watson probably going to miss three quarters of the regular season next year.
Yep.
And then he's going to be a free agent. So like, what does that contract even look like? Deebo is interesting because I know he's clear, like visibly put on bad weight, right? People have done like, I don't know, but I guess the 2025 term would be like body shaming type of things with Deebo, but he's clearly put on some bad weight. If he can cut that down, and I don't think that the Packers are going to take him on that contract. I think it's way more likely he's cap casualty. And then, maybe the Packers add him from there. But if he can cut some of that weight and, you know, you get a wide receiver who has a little bit of wiggle, who can add a bunch of stuff in the backfield, especially the way that the Packers want to run these two back sets, right? I mean, how long has LaFleur been trying to do that? Now he's kind of got his fullback type of guy in Brooks, right? Yep. What does it look like when Josh Jacobs is that fullback type of guy and you have a Deebo Samuel who can get out of the backfield and stuff like that? How many end of rounds have we seen to Reed and Watson and stuff like that? Like, all that stuff could be stuff that Deebo does now too.
Sure.
I don't know how that helps them in terms of stretching the field vertically, right? All of this stuff would be stretching the field laterally. Yeah. So there's still an element in the wide receiver room that they would need to address moving forward. But he is definitely a guy that I think you could play him on the field with Reed because he is a bigger guy. He's willing to block. He's willing to do some of the dirty work running back stuff. I don't think you want him in pass protection or anything like that. But he can do plenty of those two back looks and stuff like that as a motion man or as a guy even getting carries. So I wouldn't say 100% no, in part because Goot opened his mouth in that press conference, and I think he's a very calculated person.
It is interesting. Again, you never hear him talk about opposing players. So when you hear DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel come out of his mouth, it's a very interesting just moment, if nothing else. And maybe it's much ado about nothing, probably is, but the fact that both of them may be available via either trade or in Debo's case, maybe on the free agent market if he gets released as a cap casualty, very intriguing, very intriguing. I am with you. I would rather have a DK Metcalf in that scenario. I think he adds a little bit more to this offense of what you need. And man, even if Christian Watson did come back and was even close to what he was, having two guys like DK and Christian on the outsides that can stretch the field, not the worst thing in the world either. So yeah, I'd definitely be for something like that.
I have another topic for you.
All right, let's do it.
Receiver. All right. I wrote this article last week. Let me look it up. Gosh, dang it. I'm sorry. I'm doing this. Okay. Yep. So the article I wrote, the NFL draft doesn't have what the Packers want and need at wide receiver, right? So, especially under LaFleur, right? The Packers have had very thick wide receivers out there. If you adjust on like a per snap basis, basically like the average route ran by a Packers receiver is by a guy who's 208 pounds. That's
sure
humongous for NFL standards. It's like six of the seven guys who have run the most routes for LaFleur have all hit that mark. The one exception is Jaden Reed, and then the next exception further down the list is Randall Cobb, who like Goot, again, who never says anything, was like, I did not want this guy on the team. This was a part of Aaron Rodgers' condition upon returning to the roster, right? When you look at these guys who are like 6 foot flat, 200 pounds, and are expected to run like a 4.4, there is just not a lot of them in this draft class, man. So Territorio McMillan, the guy from Arizona, he's not going to be available. That guy's probably going to be a top 10 pick, right? Yep. I know a lot of stuff can happen between now and the draft, but that's a guy you probably shouldn't be betting on him being available. Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State, he's around the range right now. He's being mocked around the range where Green Bay is picking, so like maybe that's a guy. Elik Ayomanor from Stanford, he's being projected as a second-round guy. I watched him. Do not like his film. I do not think he can get off the ball. I don't know if he's actually going to run a 4.4, right?
Okay.
And then the only other draftable guy, and this was off of NFL Draft Scouts projections because they throw out the height, weights, and 40 times. The only other draftable guy is Savion Williams from TCU. There is so much to love and hate on Savion Williams' tape. I cannot wait for – because he's the guy that the Packers fans are going to be arguing about this offseason. He's a big guy. He can get carries. He's incredibly fast. He can get off the line very well. It's a dice roll every single time whether or not he's going to catch this ball or not. He's, if he could catch, he would probably be like a top 20 pick for sure. Very interesting prospect. He's one of those, what do you call him? Rorschach tests?
Sure.
Where it's like, you know, we're all looking at the same thing, but we might be coming away with different emotions looking at it. He's a very interesting player. So I watched just a little bit of these wide receivers. I've gone in depth on the edge rushers, but I've watched a little bit of these wide receivers who are like, you know, quote unquote Packer size. And he was the most interesting one to me for sure.
And you said it was Savion Williams?
Savion Williams. Yep.
I want to get my real time reaction. I'm going to go watch just a handful of plays here of Savion Williams because I've not watched him at all.
I had the benefit of cut up, so I was able to see like what his deep routes look like, and I'm like, oh.
I'm watching his impact plays per PFF, so just to kind of see what it looks like. There's an initial name that comes to mind when I first put him on. Oh yeah, okay. I'm intrigued. He's got possession skills.
Get off the ball. He can get off the ball.
They giving it to him in the backfield too? Mm-hmm. No, that's not him. Okay.
He does get some carries. Like, I think people have compared him to like CPAT and stuff like that. I don't think he's CPAT.
But... Cordarrelle Patterson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first name that came to mind when I put him on. Also, LaVisca Chenault too.
Yeah, that's another one. I think he's more of a receiver than that, because
you have to remember I've watched five plays now. So
right, I think he's more of a player than a wide receiver than that, just because he can actually get off the line and kind of build up that speed. But yeah, he's gonna be my early guess. He's gonna be one of the most debated prospects in this draft class, where people are planting their flags one side or the other. It's kind of like, do you remember when DK was at Ole Miss and people were just arguing about him an entire offseason? Everyone just saying like all he can do is run in a straight line, and then people saying like that's enough. That's enough. Exactly. Yeah, he's big enough and fast enough that it doesn't matter. He can run in a straight line and that's fine. Like, I kind of feel like that's who Savion Williams is in this class.
Yeah, I just got three straight drops in a row and know exactly what you're talking about there now. Oh, he just lined up at quarterback. All right. And kept it.
Yeah, they do Wildcat stuff with him. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, this is very, very interesting. I'm obviously going to have to watch a whole heck of a lot more. But, yeah, I can very much see. I mean, the drops already fit in Green Bay, so we've got that going for it. Oh, there's a double catch. That's ideal. So, yeah, but you can tell he's got explosiveness. You can line him up everywhere. I agree. Oh, there's another drop. All right. Yeah, he's a very interesting player, though. You can immediately tell.
Do a favor for me. Watch him. Yeah. Watch the Stanford kid.
Okay.
I think he's Stanford kid's name? Elik Ayumanor.
Okay. I will
he's
do that.
He's a big guy. People talk about him as this, like, field stretcher, you know, big body frame guy, you know, wins jump balls and stuff like that. He doesn't actually win that many of those jump balls. And I don't know how fast that guy actually is. So I don't know if, like, we're looking at this and I'm like, are you just kind of like Hakeem Butler?
Oh, goodness gracious. Like, that was another one.
Yeah. So, yeah. We're early on in the draft cycle where you can't trust anyone's rankings, because, guys, I hate to break it to you, no one's actually seen all these players. But then I go in and I'm like, use the Packers filters, right? And I, you know, yep. I'm trying not to drink water through a fire hose. I'm trying to like actually look at like, okay, this is what the Packers look for. Let's start with those guys. And Savion Williams, thumbs, I don't even want to say thumbs up, just thumbs interesting. And then Ayumanor, thumbs down for me.
Thumbs interesting might be literally like he doesn't have the right opposable thumbs the way that he catches the ball. That might be.
Yeah. Or he might have like two sets of them. Who knows?
Yes. I mean, it's wild. I'm excited to watch. All right. I'll report back next week for our episode. I'll do both of those guys. You might need to remind me, but I'll do both of those guys in depth and then we'll go over it. I know that you also are starting to take a look at some of the advanced stats for some of these free agent positions. Corner we know is a need. I've already broke down a handful of potential corners for Green Bay, did a deep dive on DJ Reed, Rasul Douglas, just did one on Byron Murphy. I think that's all I've done. There may have been one other one, but I think those are the main ones I've done so far. But when you looked at it statistically, what did you find from some of these corners that are potential free agents in this draft or in this class?
Yeah. So a couple things on the front end, right, of like just how I view football, and that's going to influence the numbers that I look at. I want to look at a multi-year sample of data. One, you know, there's not that many data points in an NFL season. Two, guys are playing through injuries. They're missing time with injuries, all those things. So I think you want to look at the very least the last 2 years of data for these players. And that's what I ended up taking a look at, just to kind of weed out, you know, what would you like one-year wonders. And, yeah, just that type of stuff. Right. So, and the other thing is, I think a really good number for a lot of these just raw statistics to kind of turn them into something that you can use useful is adjusted net yards per attempt, which again, it's just yards per pass treats touchdowns as an added 20-yard bonus for the offense and interceptions as a 45-yard ding. There's a bunch of studies on it. It correlates from a quarterback perspective, or I guess a team perspective. It correlates much better to wins than like passer rating and stuff like that.
Sure.
And it also gives you these numbers that you can actually use. So we can look at cornerbacks, outside cornerbacks specifically with like NFL Pro and stuff like that. I'm sure you can do it with PFF too. You could look at outside cornerbacks, because we know we're looking at outside cornerbacks, because Javon Bullard is going to be playing in the slot, right? We could look at how many yards they're giving up per coverage snap, and we could throw in the touchdowns and interceptions there. And we can weight those things in a way that correlates to wins better than passer rating, right? So if we do that and then we compare it to the league average over that time, we could look at the qualifying cornerbacks. So I have 98 qualifying cornerbacks from the past 2 years. And basically the qualifier I set was, did you have more outside corner snaps than Keyshawn Nixon? That's kind of where I had the bar. Carrington Valentine was worth about 129 adjusted yards of value, more than the NFL average cornerback. That ranks 23rd among the 89. Jair is 41st. Keyshawn is 45th. They're both just like slightly above average. Some of that is probably due to them not being on the field as outside cornerbacks full time. I would guess they'd probably be a little notch higher. And then Eric Stokes, minus 64 yards. He is 70th out of the 98.
So much higher than I would have expected it, to be honest.
There's a lot of bad cornerbacks in the league. A couple of them play for the Jaguars and they just get bombed constantly, which doesn't help. That also is like it's like efficiency through volume stat. So like on the low end, if you're playing bad, you kind of get ripped out of the starting lineup. So on the low end, it doesn't measure, you know, what you want really. In the same way that it measures at the top. Rasul Douglas, top free agent in this cornerback class available in this stat. Sixth. So he's almost plus 300 adjusted.
Have you watched his Bills tape from this year at all?
I have not. I'm very interested in looking at it after this year. I know PFF has him dinged way down compared to last season. So, I mean, it's just good to have these data points, right? Like look at the 2 year average. Okay. Maybe he wasn't good this year. Why wasn't he good this year? Is an athleticism falling off? Was he playing through injury, stuff like that? Next guy, DJ Reed, 16th. I know everyone's talked about him. He's been super high on all these lists for a while. Paulson Adebo, 21st. Didn't realize he was going to be so high. He's actually pretty interesting because he's a young guy. He is like 25 years old, and a lot of these guys on the list are much lower. Byron Murphy after that at 25th, and then the next highest one is 38. So I think the way I'm going to treat it, and I think I'm going to start diving into some of this tape and writing some of these, free agency scouting reports up at APC. Like I'm going to look at Rasul. I'm going to look at DJ Reed. I'm going to look at Adebo. I'm going to look at Murphy, and then I'm going to look at Asante Samuel too. Just because I know he dealt with an injury this past season. There's ties there with the passing game coordinator on the defensive side who recruited him and stuff like that. So, was with him with the Los Angeles Chargers and stuff like that. Yeah. So, you know, there's ties. The surprising one to me, Carlton Davis, 87th.
Whew. Ugly.
He's not been playing well. So,
where was Tre'Davious Ward?
He was fifth on the list. He was the one who was 38th. So he's 38th.
Got it.
Asante Samuel is 39th. Then it's Gilmore 44th, and then Jonathan Jones 60th. Carlton Davis 87th, and those are the only guys I looked at because they were the ones who made the top 100 on Pro Football Focus's top 100 free agent list. I excluded Nate Hobbs and Mike Hilton, guys who might pop up on some of these cornerback lists. Those guys are slot corners, slot corners. They have combined to play 113 outside cornerback snaps over the last two seasons. So that's like, I mean, we're talking like less than 30, right? More than 25, less than 30 snaps. For perspective, Keyshawn Nixon over the last 2 years has played 347, and he was primarily their nickelback for a year and a half of those 2 years. So I would not consider those guys outside guys.
Yeah, Rasul, and I watched him, just my negatives that I had on tape, still gambles and takes the bait a bit. Feels like he lost a step. Footwork is inconsistent. We'll get stuck in mud and coverage and in space. My concerns were short speed, closing speed, and deep speed. Outside corner, obviously, only technique doesn't look as consistent. Penalties were a major problem. Doesn't look and feel quite like the same player coming off a tough season, going into his age 30 year. And the expectation, at least I think PFF had him at about 13 mil per year. And like, if you got good Rasul, you feel pretty good about that. But the year that I saw last year, that would be a pretty significant overpay. But I do think he'd fit well in Jeff Hafley's defense. Obviously, he's played his best football in Green Bay, arguably. Still a willing tackler, can play left or right side, assignment sure, still plays with physicality. So I think there's still a lot of stuff there to like, but, and obviously the advanced metric there would be very much in favor of him. But yeah. What was his, so this year targeted 57 times, 42 receptions, 73.7 completion percentage, 509 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, 3 pass breakups, 10 penalties, 118.2 passer rating for Sewell.
I'll pull up the numbers that I'm working off of because again, you're going off of PFF, right? So I was using NFL Pro because I can publish them. Is why I did it. This past year, Rasul. So I have him 453 coverage snaps, 442 yards given up, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. His year before was significantly better. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the 5 picks.
Yes, his year before was much better.
Yeah. So, I mean, just interesting stuff to look at.
Paulson Adebo is the one I want to look at on tape because I'm actually intrigued.
So he was the one that popped up that I was like, okay, you're not like even really on my radar because at least, you know, DJ Reed, Byron Murphy. I mean, I'd seen enough Byron Murphy. Like, I can give you the scouting report right now. Like, I don't need to watch any more film on that guy. But DJ Reed at least had been talked about for forever. Asante Samuel was a guy who, you know, obviously, like, there's some Packers ties there. The injuries, you know, big name. He was like a second-round pick, all that stuff. Tre'Davious Ward played for a rival team that I've seen a whole ton of over the past couple of seasons. Adebo was the one where I was like, really? I didn't know that. Last time I checked in on you, you were splitting time with like Isaac Yiadom. So
I didn't former Packer legend, Isaac Yiadom.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah. Looking at his tape and you know, what it looked post the Lattimore trade is definitely going to be a premium watch for me.
I had another question I wanted to ask you, but I think I'm going to save it for next week because I want to dive into it a little bit more. But I do have a couple of really quick ones before we get out of here. First of all, Aaron Rodgers, who's he play for next year?
So people keep saying he wants to play.
Yep.
I don't know if he's going to want to play at the price tag that people are willing to pay him.
Here's how I feel. I don't think it has anything. Well, that's not true. It has something to do with price tag. All it's going to take is one team to say, to go gaga over him and just say, we're in the Aaron Rodgers business. We want you to be the guy. Who do you want to come with you? We'll build the offense around just one team. It's going to take one. And as long as he feels that love and like that he's the guy, I think that's all it's going to take.
What team is it going to be? So it's not going to be the Browns. They don't have the money.
Steelers. What about Steelers?
Man, maybe. Okay, that's one.
I think that's the team I lean towards.
The Steelers just got Russell Wilson for nothing.
Yeah, right? It might not be enough. I mean, 1 year, 10 mil? Justin 1 year, Fields 10 mil? Nothing.
10 mil? You think he's going to sign off for 10 mil?
I think if he gets everything that he wants along with it, I think he would consider it. Maybe I'm wrong. I could easily
be wrong. I don't think so. This was a guy who was bitching and moaning when the team was trying to go all in. And he's like, you're not giving me enough assets. And he was making $50 million a
year. 25 mil? 20? What are we looking? 40?
I think it has to be like 30, 35 before he even like actually considers it.
You might be right. You might be right. I don't know that there's a world in which that happens, though, which is maybe your point.
I mean, look at how much money Brady is making. You can't tell me some like Aaron Rodgers, McAfee stream on ESPN, like all stream on ESPN for college games and, you know, Monday Night Football couldn't bring in a ton of money.
I mean, the Steelers could probably do something 1 year, 30, where they pay them 10 mil this year and 20 mil next year and are fine with it.
It's just hard for me to find the team. I mean, the Steelers might make sense, but outside of them, like I'm looking at the top of the draft, Tennessee, I think you'd probably just rather go with the rookie, especially with the situation that the coaching staff is in, right? I mean, could you imagine your coaching staff, the general manager who hired you just got fired, and now you're bringing in Aaron Rodgers into the mix, and you're going into year three of this thing? That's risky business to be in. That is a quick way to kind of lose power there. Cleveland's picking 2. They can't do it.
Yep.
Giants are 3. I don't think so. You know, Patriots 4, Jags 5, Raiders are 6, Buddy, I cannot imagine a worse match in coaching than Chip Kelly and Aaron Rodgers. My goodness, just two dudes who want to do it one specific way.
Way that they do it. Yeah, holy cow. Yeah, now I want that. Now I want that. That's what I want to see.
Oh my. If Pete can figure that out, Pete might be like the best locker room coach in NFL history. Seven is the Jets. They're obviously, they told him no after he paid his way to fly out there. Carolina Vikings? At 8. Vikings would be funny. I don't think they're going to do it. I mean, they have two options already. So like we're looking at that's the bottom end of the NFL, and we're already ruling out all these teams. So like, yeah, maybe the Steelers would be willing to do it. My goodness, I can't imagine the blowups between Pickens and Rodgers, because like Pickens isn't going to take it when he yells at him and tells him, you know, you should have been running this because I gave you a little glance that you were supposed to know because I did it with Devontae 5 years prior. Like, I don't know. I genuinely don't know, man. It wasn't good this past year, and no. I think you have to protect him a lot and have all sorts of pieces around him. And he's a guy who's made a lot of money, and guys who make a lot of money don't usually take jobs where they don't make a lot of money. And I think that's kind of where he's at in his playing career right now. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. All right, last but not least, have you seen Super Bowl odds yet?
For the upcoming year? No, I have not.
Yes, perfect. All right, that's exactly what I was hoping you were going to say. All right, so first question for you. Where do you expect the Packers to be on the list of 32 teams? What rank are they in Super Bowl odds?
All right, I got to work my way backwards. Behind the Eagles, behind the Chiefs, behind the Bills, behind the Ravens, maybe behind the Lions, and then I'm willing to take my shot.
Just for the record, you literally named the first five teams exactly in order. The Eagles, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, Lions were the exact five teams.
So
right, one to five.
I was looking at Tankathon, going through the reverse order. I scrolled down because I was looking at Tankathon to see what the order was at the top of the draft when we were talking about Rodgers. I scrolled down to the bottom. I worked my way down, and then I think I picked the Ravens ahead of the Lions because I was iffier on the Lions, and then I just skipped the Commanders entirely. And those are the last six picks in the draft. So
Eagles, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, Lions, right in that order. Eagles plus 625, Chiefs plus 650, Bills plus 675, Ravens plus 675, Lions plus 1100. All right, I will let you know there are two more teams in between the Packers and those five teams.
Are people really into the Niners and Bengals?
You're damn close. So 49ers are next, plus 1400, and Bengals then are tied with Green Bay at plus 2000. The only other team that's ahead of them is the Commanders at plus 1700.
All right, I refuse to acknowledge the Commanders hype. I think they had a very fun year. I think it would be very tough for them to run it back. We're putting a whole lot into a divisional round win. Oh my goodness. Just because.
Yeah. Although it's probably what teams did with Green Bay last year.
Yeah. I guess so. But dang.
And the Texans
pretty close.
Yeah. You've crushed that, by the way.
Let's go.
I don't know. I don't have a good question for this, but one of the more interesting things to me was the Vikings and Bears are tied 3,500.
I mean, the Vikings are going to turn over a lot. Who knows what it's going to be? Like, they have cap space right now if you look at it, but like they also like they're losing like 40 something percent of their snaps to free agency, and they have no draft picks, right? They have like one pick in the first four rounds or something like that. I think that's probably putting a little bit too much on. Well, maybe it's not, because who knows about the quarterback regression and stuff in Minnesota. I think that's probably overhyping the addition of Ben Johnson in Chicago a little bit. But have they hired a DC? Is it Dennis Allen?
I think they did, right? Dennis Allen is? I'm almost positive it's Dennis Allen. Yeah, he's the defensive coordinator for the Bears. Yep. Their special teams coordinator fell through. It was supposed to be the Saints coach, Rizzi. But that never ended up happening, I don't think. But Allen did end up happening.
Yeah, what a weird kind of setup. Oh, Bieniemy is there too. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what it looks like. Dennis Allen is a pretty good defensive coordinator. They're going to have to play man. That's the way that that defense works. I don't know what they're going to do with those linebackers, and they're kind of in a weird spot with their roster because really the man-heavy teams, you're going to be blitzing a lot. So you don't need star pat. Like when you think about like the defenses that Revis was playing for with the Jets, right, where they're blitzing their inside backers and stuff all the time, it's not like their defensive linemen were stars, right?
Yeah.
The stars really are all on the back end because those are the guys who are the most exposed compared to kind of like the Packers style defense where, you know, the coverage really isn't exposed, but the pass rush is, and you really need the talent in the pass rush situation. So I think they're going to have to kind of reshape what that roster looks like a little bit because, I mean, some of their best players, like, or I guess, you know, highest spent players, stuff like that, like, Javon Dexter is a good guy. Montez Sweat is a good guy. At the linebacker level, I don't know if Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards are the guys that I want to blitz and also be in man coverage one-on-one with no help. Like,
yeah.
And then corner, I mean, I know Jalen Johnson is really good, but Tyreek Stevenson is very up and down right now. So I don't think that they're going to be as good as the Vikings. So.
No, I would.
I'd probably take offense to that if I were a Vikings fan.
I would too. I think I would too. I would definitely take in Minnesota. I think I have a little bit more. Well, I mean, we'll see what Ben Johnson can do, obviously, and maybe they just get a bump from that. But I trust Minnesota a little bit more, I think, in that situation. But I don't. My genuine hope is that neither of them are in that Super Bowl conversation. That would not be fun. So hopefully we don't have to worry about that either way.
Another year of this of the toughest division ever.
Yeah, don't want it. I'm against it wholeheartedly. All right. What else? Anything else you want to get over or go over, Justice, before we get out of here?
Not particularly. Did just notice Samori Toure signed a reserve futures deal with the Bears now that I'm looking at their roster. So
he was there already, right? Or was he somewhere else? He was there already.
He signed with the new coaching staff. So
yeah.
Interesting. Noah.
That's why nothing, they're 3,500 with the Vikings. That's why they're even. They're climbing up the rankings because Samori Toure signed today.
Yeah, it's February 10th. I don't have very many things to talk about right now. That's why I'm like finally digging into film and stuff like that, running these numbers. I'm going to have a couple more posts like that cornerbacks thing where I talked about where, you know, here are all of the advanced metrics. Here's where the free agents stand. Here's how they rank compared to their NFL peers. Here's how they rank compared to the Packers guys. I'm probably going to get those on edge rushers, interior defensive linemen later this week. The cornerbacks one is already on the site. Outside of that, man, I've been enjoying weekends. Like that's what I've been doing for the past couple, but really the last 2 weeks. I've had Saturdays where I haven't had to sit down and watch football and stuff like that for the first time in a while, and I've been enjoying that a little bit.
All right, let's do homework. All right, so TCU wide receiver, Stanford wide receiver, Paulson Adebo. What's yep. one more we should look, and then we'll compare notes next week. What's one more we can be drafted?
I'll watch Rasul for sure.
Okay, you'll watch Rasul. All right, I've got that one done, so that one makes it easy for me. All right, so we'll go over next week. TC wide receiver, Stanford wide receiver, Paulson Adebo, Rasul Douglas.
Done.
All right, let's do it. All right, man, you're the absolute best. I will talk to you next week. I'm sure we'll have a bunch of new stuff to discuss. Maybe there's a Jair Alexander decision by then. Could be. You never know.
We'll see. There's no deadline there. So if I were the Packers, I'd probably drag it out until I need to use cap space for free agents. Unfortunately, agreed. I don't think we're going to get an answer there.
I think so too. I think you're probably right. What do you got cooking this week other than some of the stuff you've already went over?
Just the advanced stats stuff. I mean, I'm hoping that I can dig in a little bit more on this free agency stuff. I always want to jump into the draft. I can't really jump into the draft because I'm supposed to pay attention to free agency. I started my work as a writer doing draft stuff. I've worked in player acquisition stuff for like the XFL, looking at college guys and stuff like that. So I always kind of like want to ignore free agency and just like whatever happens. I kind of know who the players are already. So, you know, it doesn't really help me that much, but I think I'm going to dive into it a little bit more this year just because the Packers have so much cap space and it seems like they're actually going to have to use it. So definitely going to look at the cornerback class first. I'm going to try to look at, you know, Rasul Douglas, DJ Reed, Adebo, Byron Murphy, Asante Samuel. Those are definitely guys that I want to hit. Get scouting reports, thoughts on that up on the site, and we'll probably go from there. We'll see who becomes available. I mean, I'm sure cap casualties and stuff are going to start rolling out pretty soon. Combine is only a couple of weeks away, so the agent hobnobbing and rubbing shoulders, elbows, all that stuff is about to happen.
We had our first cap casualty today, right? Okorafor for the Patriots, the offensive tackle, I think was the first one.
Didn't even see it.
Yeah, I think it was the first
bummer one. For him.
I think we're already off and running. So get your Okorafor tape going just in case. You never know. No, but I'm right there with you. This is always the worst, one of the worst parts of the year for me, in the fact that like I want to dive headfirst into the draft, and it just like, I feel like there has to be an order of operations where I get done with the season. I kind of recap the season. Where's Green Bay at? Then I jump into free agency and start looking at the potential free agents Green Bay could sign. And then I feel like everyone else has already got like their top 100 boards together. And I'm like, I've watched two guys maybe like, and like, or that I feel like I could remotely talk educatedly, but, and I can't, I think you're kind of saying the same. I can't half-ass it. I can't just be like, I'm going to take a look at 10 plays from this one guy and then look at his scouting report and be like, all right, know what I like? I have to watch like,
well, because guys like you are going to ask me, what cornerback do you want the Packers to sign? And I got to have at least a semi-educated answer on it. Instead of just saying,
100%. Like there's a logical order of operations to this, I feel like. And I just, if I feel like I skip over to draft immediately, then I feel like I've half-assed something else along the way. And I can't do it. But well, I think we'll both get there very, very soon. And I'm looking forward to those draft conversations as well.
Yeah.
All right, man. Appreciate you a ton. Go follow him on social media at JUMOSQ. Find him on one of the very best Packer sites out there on acmepackingcompany.com. Of course, you can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.